Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Phantom in the plague mask, walking through the CVS. White beak, black cape, dressed like a professional. Evil hand waving and he's leaving a trace. Filling up the space while you're touching your face. And now he's roaming in the crowd, defying in a riot. And he's shouting with glee, getting nearer to thee. Flash go bang bang like the day of Assumption. And you lay down on your back by the blow of a truncheon.
From newsounds.org, this is a special edition of Soundcheck, our series of live performances and interviews. I'm John Schaefer. You just heard Mike Doty refer to the plague year in this song. The song's called 1918, the year of the global flu pandemic. But of course, it refers to our current plague year of 2020. This is from the new EP by Mike's new band called Ghost of Vroom. Collaboration with Andrew Scrap Livingston on cello and bass, and a couple of others. Recently, Mike and Scrap joined us for a virtual event in WNYC's Green Space. That's our ground floor performance venue, which is, of course, closed for live performances right now. Mike played some live solo songs, and both of the guys talked about everything from Soul Coughing, Mike's popular band of the 90s, to the music of Igor Stravinsky. All of it broadcast live on the Green Space's YouTube channel. Here's how the show began, with Mike Doty playing his new song called Rona Polona.
Hey, Sean. Don't touch the box, don't touch the shelf. Don't touch the people, don't touch yourself. Lysol, sprayed on the wheel. No hugging, no kissing, hand holding, no feel. Savoir faire, Pikachu pillowcase, mask looking debonair. Conversating with an Amazon bot. Whataburger drive through, dressing like an astronaut. We do the Rona Polona. We do the Rona Polona. You won't know it if you're doing it right. You never know it if you're doing it right. You won't know it if you're doing it right. If you're doing it right, you're doing it right. Fuck this curve, fuck Mnuchin. If I was a kid, I'd find me a store to loot. Chin up, at least you learn to use the phone. Soderbergh reboot of Home Alone's what you live. Don't watch the vain man who can't forgive. Jesus would for the common good. I got the mask on, laying in the cut. At the Dunkin' like an extra and eyes wide shut. Do the Rona Polona. You do the Rona Polona. You won't know it if you're doing it right. You never know it if you're doing it right. You won't know it if you're doing it right. If you're doing it right, you're doing it right. Homer in the hedges, scrub down the edges. Voices in my head like a little tiny Cardi B. On the ledge with a box of wipes next to me. If I jump, they'll scoop me up. Throw me in a sanitized Super Cup cup. Come correct with a stimulus check and buy a yellow esteem. I'm unsure when, but I'll jet before they close down France again. You do the Rona Polona. Do the Rona Polona. You won't know it if you're doing it right. You never know it if you're doing it right. You won't know it if you're doing it right. And if you're doing it right, you're doing it right. Won't know it if you're doing it right. You never know it if you're doing it right. You won't know it if you're doing it right. And if you're doing it right, if you're doing it right, if you're doing it right, then you're doing it right.
That is Mike Doty with the song Rona Polona. That's a great way to get us started, I suppose. I'm not really sure. first of all, Mike, thanks for joining us.
Of course, today. Absolutely. Thank you.
And let me bring in Scrap, Andrew Scrap Livingston, who plays bass all over the new record and has performed with you for a long time. Hi, Scrap.
Hello, hello.
Let me ask you, Mike, you've been around the block in this business a few times.
Yes.
You know there's a very long history of pop songs that introduce dance moves. You know, do the locomotion, do yes. the hucklebuck, the twist.
Right.
What I love about the Rona Polona is you'll never know if you're doing it right.
Yeah, exactly. It's the dance move that we don't know if we're actually doing it. We don't know if we missed something or just have been doing it wrong the whole time and just have managed to avoid it or, yeah.
Now, were you thinking along those lines when you wrote the song?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was, we actually made Ghost of Room 1 and, you know, our manager was like, please, please don't put this out. Please wait till you can tour again. And we were like, fine, that's fine. And then I ended up writing this EP that was very of the moment. And I called him up like in July and was like, hey, man, I got bad news. We're putting out a record like in like a month. You get a month to get ready for this thing to come out. So hence Ghost of Room 2 is out before Ghost of Room 1.
I was going to ask where the number 2 came from. Of course, the title Ghost of Vroom
yeah.
will be, you know, that'll be a callback that Soul Coughing fans will be familiar with. So when you guys were making this record, you know, how much of a wink and a nod were you intending to people who've been following you for many years?
Well, so Ghost of Vroom was a working title for a dub version of Ruby Vroom. The first Soul Coughing.
The first
album.
Still, yep, right. Yep.
Burning Spear put out a version of Marcus Garvey called Garvey's Ghost. And I really liked the title Ruby Room just so I could make Ghost of Room. And what happened was I just started writing essentially Soul Coughing songs again. So I went back to that, a title that we never used. And really, the other thing is it really is a band. It really is about me and Scrap, so it's not just an album name. It is a band name, so Scrap can speak better to the unison vibe.
So Scrap, tell us a little bit about how, first of all, just on a purely nuts and bolts level, how did you do this during the middle of a pandemic?
Well, Mike's very prolific, so him sending stuff or asking questions if something can be voiced on a cello or a bit or whatever is very common, you know. And we just did it remotely, you know. He sent me stuff and I'd put down my parts. Our drummer would put down the parts and Mario C. mixed it. And
yeah, and Logan Hanna played the guitar. He actually came over to my house. He's a Memphis guy and sat, you know, over there, like 20 feet over there with a mask on. And I just left like a guitar table, a cable sitting on a chair, and he just sat down and played through each song 3 times.
Yeah, y'all didn't like hang out at all, really.
No, not at all. Like, hey man, what's going on? There's the guitar, leave, okay, we're rolling.
Well, you know, it's interesting to compare what you do so much of these days, Mike, guy with guitar, you know, yeah. totally solo acoustic stripped down,
yeah.
to the way you guys like to make records, which is samples and layers of production.
Yeah.
And in this case, when everybody's doing their own part remotely and then you're putting it all together, it's not that far removed from working with samples. They just happen to be 3 minutes long instead of 5 seconds.
Well, indeed. I mean, I do tell everybody that like everything that you do is going to end up where you put it. Like it's not going to be a super like Frankencomp stitch job where it's like, you know, I take this fill and put it in the coda, you know, like think about where you put things in the song, because it will end up having a very live band kind of a feel despite the strangeness of the process.
I loved the expedient nature of it, man. It was just like, I don't know if my sense of time is really bad, but it felt like one day we just, you know, we recorded these songs and then like a week later there was a thing in the world, you know, which was really cool.
So Mike, since we have already referred to like the earliest years of Soul Coughing, you and the band kind of grew up around the experimental music scene in Lower Manhattan, specifically
yes.
the original Knitting Factory.
Yes.
Which at the time was frequented by people like me, you know, fans of John Zorn and no one else.
Yes. Core group of about 20 musicians and 75 audience members.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess I'm just wondering, what, if anything, have you carried with you from those kind of wild, unhinged sonic explorations that you would witness at the Knitting Factory through your career as a songwriter?
Well, I mean, I just learned how to be a musician in a way that I don't think most people learn, which is like, I was, you know, like a punk rock power chord, you know, Latches anti-folk scene. That was my thing. And I just ended up meeting all these guys. The ticket desk where I worked at kind of ended up being like a VIP bar in a weird way. So like Zorn would be there and Sam Bennett would be there and, you know, Yuka Honda would be there. Everyone's like hanging out. And I sort of absorbed this kind of experimental jazz mindset despite having no experience or ability to play it. And it matched up perfectly with like Public Enemy records and like the kind of house records and techno records that I was listening to. The golden age of jazz hip hop in New York City and, you know, 90 through 92. So it really was like I remember Dave Douglas,
the trumpeter, yeah.
Hearing something that was playing in the bar and being like, it's Charles Ives. And it was like, who's Charles Ives? But I'm into it.
Yeah. And then you got to go find out who Charles Ives was.
Exactly.
You
know, yeah.
Not only one of the founders of the American experimental music tradition, but also one of the founders of the modern American insurance industry.
Yes.
He came up with the group rate. That's Charles Ives.
Is that true? Did he really do that?
He did.
Okay. I've been one-upped. Well done, Scrap. Tell me how and when you and Mike first got together.
Somewhere in the ballpark of 15 years ago, I heard he was looking for a bass player, and I sent an email with a really, really out there. I thought it was a long shot, so I was like, I'm just going to send whatever I want. And I sent him a bunch of avant-garde stuff and a really weird version of the Sesame Street theme song, and was surprised to get a call back. And
it was a long shot. I mean, it was just so weird, and there was no sense of his playing. But he said in his introductory email at some point that he often cries at commercials. It's like, hey, I just got my master's in composition from Brooklyn College, and I live in East Williamsburg, and sometimes I cry at commercials. And I was like, obviously this is not the guy, but I have to meet this guy. Like, oh man, wouldn't it be cool if this was the guy?
And did Mike know he was getting a cellist along with his bass player?
You know, I don't think we talked about that. And because, like, I feel like for the first year or two we played, I was just, you know, playing bass. And then I feel like, I don't know if this is true, but I feel like the cello thing happened out of convenience, maybe, because it's like a lot easier to transport than the bass. And then it worked so well, we were like, let's just do this, man.
Mike, you often play in different tunings on the guitar, right?
Right.
And one of the reasons for that is when you change the fingering, you really are changing the way you have to approach the instrument. So yeah, you don't get stuck in ruts.
Exactly. Yeah. You have to rethink. And I'll do things like, you know, go buy like an oud on the internet and just like, and you know, I'm not going to end up being an oud player or the Zhong Ruan, which is a Chinese tenor lute, which is like kind of the weirdest banjo you ever met in your life, like weird bamboo banjo. And you just pick these instruments up and you just write something different because there's just something different about it. And that had a lot to do with how I got into the drop tunings. The other thing is I play in drop C, which is absolutely perfect for the low register of Scrap's cello.
Yeah. It's a really like, we kind of occupy the same register in a really strange, cool way.
It's also called being out of tune, which is something I endorse. No, for real. Like, I hate the guitar tuner. I think it's one of the most destructive forces in modern music. Like, you know, things just being like a little out of whack, I think is a splendid idea.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of out of whack, we're talking with Mike Doty and Scrap Livingston about their new EP called Ghost of Vroom 2. For the moment, Mike, speaking of tunings, that will restrict the huge range of songs that you've written over the years,
right,
you know, to what you can play now with this guitar in this
tuning. Right,
tuning.
Right, yeah. It's, I'm going to play a song from Ghost of Room 1, which is was finished about a year ago, and it's about the first director of the CIA. It's called James Jesus Angleton.
Down in the club where the fires are light, James Jesus Angleton takes shelter from the night. All your papers are in order, yes it seems. James Jesus Angleton is singing in your dreams. I won't betray you in the bars of Istanbul. On Nebraska Avenue, I won't play you for a fool. Won't surrender, I won't go without a fight. James Jesus Angleton is singing in the night. James Jesus Angleton. James Jesus Angleton. James Jesus Angleton. James Jesus Angleton. Forty nondescript men wear trilbies in the hole. James Jesus Angleton sends codes out to control. All your good men, they inform and they conspire. James Jesus Angleton is singing down the wire. James Jesus Angleton. James Jesus Angleton. James Jesus Angleton. James Jesus Angleton. Every afternoon at 3, we end the war. James Jesus Angleton goes drinking at the shore. Foil your agents, we will kill them or they'll flee. James Jesus Angleton is singing to the sea. James Jesus Angleton. James Jesus Angleton. James Jesus Angleton. James Jesus Angleton.
Mike Doty, I missed the ice cream truck at the very end.
Yeah.
Well, that was when you you recorded it in a hotel room in London, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Wow. Just so you listen to the Patreon version. Wow.
Yes. Yes. And I wanted to ask you about doing songs for Patreon, but I know you have another song you want to play for us.
Oh, yeah.
So let's get to that in short order. What's this going to be? It's obviously going to be in the same tuning.
Yeah, there you go. Good call. Otherwise, the thing about coming out of Drop C is it takes a very long time. So it's for the best, I promise. This is from... the album Stellar Motel, and it's called Raging On.
Gruesome, get cute, and it's gone. Sad suckers with sacks of Szechuan. I know that guy from someplace. Why you cut loose with Ray Dawn Sean? Open the blinds, put the light in, don't exit, no. Risk the kiss as you lasso your senses down. Lips so wistful, burn white from relapsing and busting dishes, you're raging, raging on. Raging on. And you're raging on. 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 You wild and wiry one. Rough kicks kill the cheap rum.
all and sundry spot the long con. I could use a desperate man, dance like Ducky at the prom. Shapely plates that you spit your elixir in. Bridges listing, no lights and no trucks on them. Flipping switches, your wrists don't do it too long. Crystal smashing, you're raging, raging on. Raging on. And you're raging on. On, on. You wild and wiry one.
Mike Doty, live, solo, and a song called Raging On. And Ghost of Room 2 is the latest EP. So let me ask you, Mike, about Patreon. You originally wrote James Jesus Angleton as part of this song almost every week.
No, literally every week.
Literally every week.
Yeah, there's
been
like 2 weeks where I've messed up, but there have been more weeks where I do more than one, and it turns out being like, you know, the old New Yorker subscription thing where like people cancel because they don't read them all. I have to keep it to one a week because if I like get overly prolific, people start canceling.
Now, Scrap, here is a question for you from Punchinello H, watching us on YouTube. The question is, Mike loves the majestic space chord. Do you have a bass sound to counter-strike his otherworldly acoustics?
I'll play the majestic space chord for you. It's this. And I just end too many songs. I think Scrap actually is surprised when I don't end songs in the majestic space chord.
What winds up happening is we have this thing called the last note war. So he like kind of arpeggiates that chord, and then I'm like, nah. You know, like I add a little nugget at the end, and it's very hard for me. One of the only areas of my life where I'm like a dominant person is having the last note of the song. When it's like hanging there, I cannot force myself to not put the punctuation at the end of the thing.
And he does it in such a way that you can't just be like, oh yeah, well, you know, there's like such artful finality to that, to the way he wins the last note war, that it's infuriating, really. I think
it's interesting to think of doing that with a cello in a quote-unquote rock band, but okay. Have you ever, Mike, sat down and actually figured out what that chord is? Is it like a major 11th or something?
I think it's
something?
A ninth chord. I mean, Scrap's like a Stravinsky guy. He like knows. You know, like he's read that Schoenberg book, you know, and that Hindemith book, and knows all that stuff. And so he's also the nicest guy about, you know, like some very well trained musicians would be like, well, don't you know you're playing a suspended sixth over a blah blah blah? But he's just like, oh, word, B, it's a suspended ninth. Oh, he's just like really nice about it. And I've actually learned things about music theory just hanging out with him.
All right, Scrap, same question to you. What the hell is that chord?
I don't know.
Come on.
It's a lot of root and a lot of fifth, and I think there is a ninth there. So
yeah, well, that's it's yeah. I mean, it's open tuning, so it's root. It's a root fifth party. So
yeah.
So I mean, throwing out names like Schoenberg and Hindemith shows, Mike, that you have some awareness of classical music.
Yeah,
is that
a little bit? But I mean, but you know, it's not like it, the first time I heard The Rite of Spring was driving around with Scrap, and you know, he's like educated me on all this stuff, and Glenn Gould and all this stuff. We drove around, you know, and Rite of Spring, and I think it was WNYC it came on, and Scrap like drove me to my house, and I was like, can we keep driving for a little while so I can listen to this thing? And he was like, absolutely. You know,
we call those driveway moments.
Yes.
When you just can't get out of the car
until
the song is over or the news story.
Thank
or whatever.
Thank you, Stravinsky. Yeah.
Yeah. I think probably my first ever classical music concert at Carnegie Hall. It was San Francisco Symphony Orchestra doing Sibelius Violin Concerto, big favorite, Isaac Stern, hugely popular, sawing away at it. But after intermission was Rite of Spring. And we're talking like, well, you know, latter half of the 20th century, and there were still people getting up and leaving.
Right.
And I just thought, oh, this is for me.
Yeah. This,
because I was a punk rock kid too.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, how punk is this, that this piece of music is like 70 years old and still has this effect on
people? Yeah, I drove 900 miles to hear the Birmingham, Alabama orchestra play the Rite of Spring, because, you know, I'll be honest, I wanted to see if they could do it, and they killed it. But there were people there that got up and left, and whatever, that was probably like 1996 or something, and I was like, wow, okay.
This is where we want to live.
Yeah. Like,
artistically, yeah.
Well, look, so we brought you guys here to talk about Ghost of Vroom 2, but you keep talking about Ghost of Vroom 1. So what is it? When do we get to hear it? Are you waiting until you can actually tour before releasing it?
No, we're gonna put it out in 2021, as early as we can in 2021. Make some videos. We have a couple of great video collaborators. Swivs is one director. Wartella is another director. Animators. But we're incredibly proud of that album. Made it with Mario C in Eagle Rock. Gene Coy, jazz drummer, playing drums. Just very proud of it. Can't wait to put it out.
All right. Well, speaking of videos, we do have to premiere for people tonight the video from the third song on Ghost of Vroom 2, which is called Chief of Police. Again, Mike, lots of sampling, you know, in the production here. Mm-hmm. And this very much, as I said before, a song about this particular moment in time.
Sure.
Did you have any trepidation about tackling such a big topic in a song?
Yeah, I mean, of course I did. It began with this very funky riff, vocal riff, using the word grieving. That was the first lyric, and I was like, how do you write a funky song with the word grieving featured prominently? And, you know, I mean, it's terrifying to write about stuff and to be in the moment, especially in this very, very examined and critical moment where, you know, you're always, at least I'm always trying to not be misunderstood. But, you know, you have to take those risks. The risks come to you, and you have to respect them and honor them. And, you know, I think as you get older, as any kind of artist, you're listening and watching, and you're really feeling the things present themselves to you. You're not trying to, like, you know, like when I was a kid and I was like, these creations of genius that I am bringing forth from my heart, now it just seems like they're in the cosmos and they're in the air and they're finding me for some reason.
Yeah. Mike Doty, Scrap Livingston, guys, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you both for zooming in and joining us in our virtual green space tonight.
Always such a pleasure to be with you, man. So great. So great to see you.
Yeah. Big fan, John. Big fan.
Chief of Police is the song from Ghost of Vroom 2, the new EP by Mike Doty and Scrap Livingston, recording under the name Ghost of Vroom. You can watch the videos of Mike's solo performances and this video that we premiered that night at the Green Space on our website, newsounds.org, or on our YouTube channel. My thanks to the crew of the Green Space, led by Jennifer Sendro and including Sachi Azura, Ricardo Fernandez, and David McLean. Soundcheck's technical director is Irene Trudell. Our producer is Karen Havlick, and I'm John Schaefer.